Right, hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Repti Chat podcast. If you're new here, I'm your host Ben, and I am bringing you the only, I think, multi-species exotic pet podcast in the whole of the UK. We've got all sorts here, from bull pythons and leopard geckos to parrots and Gila monsters. Grab yourself some snacks, grab a beverage, and get ready for an hour or so of pure exotic animal bliss. Not much going on here really with me reptile-wise. I have recently updated my morph market with clutches 1 and 2, so if you're in the market for some of the coolest calico stuff I've ever produced, go and check it out. Do excuse me today if you're watching live, I'm a little bit warm. It's like 38 degrees in the studio at the moment, but I have got a cool new background, so I hope you guys like it. Now, if you are a regular listener, you will know at the end of each episode, if you're a regular listener, you will know at the end of each podcast, I usually do a little promo for like my Instagram and all that sort of stuff. And I've also been taking donations for the podcast through a website called Buy Me a Coffee. I've made the decision now to drop the Buy Me a Coffee website completely because although I was getting a few little donations, which I'm very grateful for, there wasn't really much going on. I wasn't really getting you guys, if you were donating, weren't getting anything back. So I scrapped the Buy Me a Coffee. I've now launched, as of today, it's been live already, but as of today, officially, I've launched the Repti Squad Patreon. Oh, here we go. Another internet person asking for money. Well, yes and no. Obviously, every little donation massively hurts the podcast, but I'm not there for your money. I've launched the Patreon for a few reasons. The main one being, I want to build like a little Repti Chat podcast community. So the podcast has been going for 8 months, 8 months today, I think. And I feel like we're building this little squad in the comments and on Facebook and Instagram, or not Facebook, on Instagram and YouTube. I'm getting regular listeners, regular people commenting now. So I've decided to launch a Patreon. Obviously, there's no pressure. Don't have to sign up. I've done it as best I can. So there's three tiers, £2, £3 and £5. All the tiers, you're getting exactly the same content. But, you know, if you've got deep pockets and you want to donate a little bit more to the podcast, who am I to say no? But if you've only got £2 a month, it doesn't matter. Every little helps. You all guys get the same. So what's on the Patreon? That was where I sort of struggled a bit. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure. It's sort of really early days, and I know I'm not really selling it. But I expect the Patreon will sort of grow as people join. It will sort of evolve into what it needs to be. So from day one, if you sign up to Patreon today, there'll be a discount on all Morph Market animals, as well as first dibs on any future animals that aren't holdbacks. So I'll announce them on the Patreon of like a week or so before, and everyone on Patreon gets to get first dibs before it goes on Morph Market anywhere else. I'm going to announce guests on there early as well. And as the Repti, what I want to call it is the Repti Squad. So as the Repti Squad begins to grow, I'll be doing like Q&A podcasts without questions solely coming from the squad members. As well as that, all the squad members will get a shout out at the beginning of each podcast episode, and then one member each episode will get like a like their social medias plugged on the podcast as well. That's where I'm at the moment. Obviously, you can chat to me as much as you want on there as well. So yeah, that's where the Patreon's at. If you want to sign up, I'd be really grateful. No pressure. And I'm sure it will evolve as it needs to. If you have any ideas, you want to join up, anything like that, all the links are in the description, so go and click that. So yeah, that's the Patreon plug. Really sorry about that. Moving on. Don't like asking for money and stuff, but you know, every little helps. In case you missed it, let's find where's that screenshot. There we go. It should be on screen now. In case you missed it, get your diaries out. November the 11th, 2023. So this year, in a couple of months, is the date for the next ARC show. I'm really excited as I'm going to be vending for the very first time. I'll be sharing the table with Ben from Rocky Ridge Reptiles, who was on a previous episode. Between us, we're going to have some Royals, some Cresties possibly, I think Rocky Ridge Reptiles is also bringing some leeches as well. And there'll probably be a few adult females and males up for sale too. So if you do want to attend the ARC show, go and check out them on Instagram or on Facebook. On Instagram, they are at the ARC show. And on Instagram, you're looking for Amphibian and Reptile Club Facebook group. All the details on how to purchase your tickets are there. Obviously, if you attended the last one, you know it was really good. This time, they've doubled in size in location. There's new parking. There's going to be food vendors. And it looks awesome. I think they said there's going to be 50 vendors as well. And not just royals, but there should be like lizards, monitors, spiders, insects, all that sort of stuff. So there should be something for everybody. So if you are interested, go and grab your tickets, because the tickets are selling really quickly now. So yeah, go and grab your tickets, come and say hi. And obviously, if you're a Repti Squad member by then, that'll be even cooler. Come and see me. I might even have some stickers or some secret merch that I haven't really decided on yet. I'm still playing with it. Anyway, moving on to the main event. Today's guest has been in the reptile keeping hobby for a fair few years now. I'm sure you've seen him on Instagram, as his reels are literally ridiculous. And he was also on Trap Talk podcast with MJ. So nice big double helping for your ear holes. So without any further ado, let's please welcome Sal from Cryptic Condoms. Hello.
Hello, Ben. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thank you very much for coming on. We'll see how I get on today. Apparently, I can't speak in proper sentences and keep tripping over my own tongue. So I'm blaming the heat. So, yeah, thank you very much, mate. I appreciate you spending your Saturday evening, afternoon with me.
My pleasure.
It's lovely to have you on. So if you haven't listened before, what I like to do to start the pod is a little section called Get to Know. It's a few quick fire questions. They don't need long answers, just to get us warmed up a little bit. So if you're ready, I'll get started.
Let's go, mate. I'm ready.
Awesome. So first exotic pet?
Leopard gecko.
The most unusual species you've ever kept?
That would be green tree monitor, rhino iguana, or chondros.
Awesome. Your favourite non-chondro exotic animal?
Black panther.
Cool, I like it. Money, space, time, legalities, no issue. What's a species that you'd love to keep?
I would say probably a marine iguana.
Okay, yeah. Are they the ones that like do the sneezing thing and all the salt comes out their nose?
Yeah.
They're cool. Favorite animal in your collection at the moment?
Oh, it's too many, but I'd say probably one of my Glasser Wilmina chondros, one of the designer ones.
Awesome. Right, and then we move on to like a little bit of this or that. So it's pretty straightforward, it's self-explanatory. So beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Sun or snow?
Snow.
Vacation or staycation?
I'll go with staycation.
Yep. Night in or night out?
Night in.
Early bird, night owl, or permanently exhausted pigeon?
Permanently exhausted pigeon.
Yeah, especially when it's this hot. And finally, the most important question, what is your favourite biscuit?
Oh, do you know what? I don't know the specific name from. I've completely forgot, but it's the, you know, the shortbreads with the raisins in them.
Yeah, my missus calls those dead fly biscuits. I can't remember what they're actually called. I know exactly what you mean.
Yep. Them ones, nice. I love them.
Yeah, good choice. So, yeah, that's the get to know section, really. Just breaks the ice a little bit, and it's a bit of fun, and gives us a little bit of an insight into what we'll be chatting about later.
Lovely.
So, let's go straight into it, really, Sal. So, could you give me a history lesson into your reptile keeping career? Take us from your first sort of ever reptile experience that you can remember, all the way up to where you are today.
I would say this probably started, I remember being about 12 or 13. And I've got a good friend of mine, Aaron, doesn't keep anymore. But I remember I met him at school and was in the same class together. And he had already been keeping reptiles for a few years. And, you know, we just started talking and it started from there, went around his, starting to see them. And it read him down like a rabbit hole, started with a leopard gecko. And then it just spirals from there. And then I think within a few years, I think my whole bedroom was basically a single bed and basically a reptile shop.
Yeah.
At one point, it spiraled definitely.
It seems to be a common occurrence for most of us. Is it goes from one to a lot more than one very quickly.
Yeah, definitely addictive.
Yeah,
but it's. I took a break, so you know I went for a period of time where I had many species in one room. And then for personal reasons, took a break, got rid of everything. And then once I had finished my studies and just thought, you know what, I'm going to come back in and really come back in buying what I dreamt of as a kid, but just wasn't affordable for me at the time.
Yeah.
So that was it, really. The only ones that I really, really regret ever getting rid of was green tree monitors.
Okay.
Because they're just so difficult to find now.
Yeah.
And I just love them. I love monitors. I'm at heart, I'm a lizard person. The snakes have grown over the years.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's monitors are something that if I had the space, I'd really like to get into as well. And like speaking with Paul's monitors, he was in the chat. I don't know if he's still there or not. But like the stuff he produces, I keeps. Every time I see a post on Instagram, I'm like, damn, man, that's incredible. I really want one.
Yeah.
So you said you took a break and then you decided to go straight back into it after that break and go for like the dream species and the species you really wanted that were unobtainable when you were a kid. So what sort of species are we talking about?
So at the moment I've got a split collection, I would say. So I'm sitting at about 100 animals at the moment.
Okay.
And I would say, you know, my dream animals were the green tree pythons or chondro pythons or chondros, you know, and that's what I really wanted to go into, and I was just thought, I've always wanted them, dreamed of it, and let me just go for it. Now I've got a quite a large royal collection as well, but they are, you know, they're the dream animal for me, the pinnacle that I wanted, and now I've got.
And so when you decided, like, I'm going for green tree pythons, I'm quite uneducated in green tree pythons. I know there's localities and designer morphs. I couldn't look at one and tell you what it was, and I couldn't even reel off any names really. But when you decided, you know what, I'm getting into green tree pythons, was that mindset like I'm going to a shop, I know that they sell green tree pythons, and I'm just going to get eight? Or did you go, right, I want this locality to start with, or I want a designer one to start with? Sort of where were you heading with that?
So I definitely knew what locality I wanted. So my favorite locality is Sarong. Right. So I definitely knew in mind that I wanted a Sarong. So I was definitely sure about that. But at the time, I wasn't really too deep into the green tree community. So I wasn't aware of breeders or who had snakes available, who had clutches coming in and out. So my first initial purchase was from a reptile shop / show. You know, I went to a show in the Chile, saw them, kind of thought about it. But then my first purchase back in was from a show. But the shop that I bought it from, they privately breed, which is Global Geckos.
I've been to there a few times. They're not that far away from me. It's a brilliant shop in there.
Yeah, they're really, really good. And they have their private collection of green trees, which they breed in-house as well. And they're really hot on what they're doing. And my main thing at the time was just to make sure it was captive bred.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. There's a question that's just popped up in the comments, and I'm going to pop it on the screen. I don't normally do the questions, but you might know, you might not know. It is from Paul's Monitors, and he has a question. He says, seeing as, I can't pronounce that, Paracinus, it's like a type of monitor, and green tree fibers come from the same place. Why don't people keep them the same way? I don't know if you've kept both, but any sort of insight into that?
You know what? It's a very good question. It is quite different how you keep them. I would say my green tree monitor vivariums were on a much larger scale compared to my green tree pythons. You know, temperatures were slightly different. I know not majorly different, but you know, temperatures for green trees monitors were at a higher basking range. But you know, to completely answer that question, I would say, I at the time when I was keeping them, I probably knew basic knowledge to keep them.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say I was quite young. This is many, many years ago, and I wasn't as educated on like the green trees I am now, because I just spent so much time keeping them and just talking to people, reading books, I probably could know a lot more about keeping them at the time, even present, to be honest with you, if I still had them. But to answer that question, I'm really, really, because if you look at like Blue Tree monitors, which I know, again, similar, but the way that like Faber Blue, which is a person that, you know, keeps them in humongous vivariums, and, you know, his setups are amazing. When you compare that to how Green Trees are kept, I think they're completely different.
Yeah, that is something that Paul just said as well. I'm going to pop the comments up. I don't normally pop the comments up, but I think it's quite a nice conversation to go with. So he says the basking spots are maybe different, but obviously the ambient temperatures vary quite a lot as well. And then he's saying he sees Green Trees, stunning snakes, but in empty setup. So he's not sure how you keep them. And obviously, with monitors, they're generally quite full setups, lots going on. Whereas I do have to agree, when you look at, like, especially from a breeder point of view, I don't know if it's for like single keepers, but Green Tree pythons tend to be relatively sterile environments with like one or two perches. Is there a particular reason for that? Let's go into that direction for a bit, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Now, I don't think there's a particular reason, but I think if we take it back, you know, this is how people, like the OG keepers, probably started keeping them a long time ago. And you know how I think a lot of the way we keep things up to this point, other than, you know, people that innovate and find new ways, it's all through habit. So a lot of us probably keep things the way they've worked for many, many years. Now, I have personally tried, I should have sent you photos, to be honest with you, and I probably can share some with you after this. I have kept mine previously in like a bioactive setup now, which are like fully planted bioactive. And the snakes are stunning, and they really do fit well in a setup that looks like that. Yeah. Now, that snake had then got an RI eventually, again, down to me. So that was me at the time, this was many years ago again, but this is, I'd oversaturated that soil. I think the humidity had spiked, and at the time was in, even though there was a drainage layer, it was in also in a big PVC enclosure. Now I think my humidity just sat for way too long. And then it I think that possibly led to an RI. Now, the way they're kept at the moment, so yeah, I keep mine quite in a sterile environment. Apart from like using sticks, you know, some of my perches are PVC, some of my perches are logs. Just depends on what was fit at the time, what I've had, to be totally honest with you. And what I've just chosen to use in that enclosure, or some of the enclosures come with the PVC perches.
And just as we are talking about the setups, Paul's also said it's lighting as well. So snakes seem to lack the lighting, whereas obviously the monitors, Paul's a massive advocate for lighting, be it basking, UVB, or UV, whatever the UV is, I think it's UV, like all the sort of full spectrum LEDs and stuff as well. So your Green Tree, do you use lighting with the GTPs? What sort of heating, lighting setup have you got in the enclosures?
So heating wise, they're all on heat panels, other than the smaller enclosures, which are on like a higher power heat mat. But once they get to a certain size, they'll go straight. Once the enclosure gets to a certain size, they go straight up to a heat panel. Lighting, I have lighting in all my enclosures. Now, I know I've seen some people use like 2% UVB, but mine are just full spectrum LED. But they all have lights on them, other than the grow on like neonate racks, which I will use to establish the animals. And once I know that they fully have a feeding response, they're going to eat every time you approach, quite settled and have good appetite, they get bumped up straight into an enclosure. You know, some people keep differently. Some people keep chondros in big tubs, which is nothing. I don't want to say that's a wrong way to do it. You know, it works for them, and people's environments are completely different as well. Overseas as well, but for me, they, as soon as they're kind of established, they go straight into enclosures.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So my only experience with Green Tree pythons, I've never like personally kept one. I don't know anyone any personal people that have kept them. So all I'm seeing is like through Instagram and YouTube. The only ones I've seen like in front of me in real life are like either in shops, or I've been to Crocodiles of the World like a million times, and they've got quite a large but very, very narrow enclosure. And they seem to, I think the last time I was there was three in the enclosure. So I don't know how that works. I'm not, obviously my knowledge is mainly royals. So I'm seeing like, obviously don't cohabitate. I don't know how it works. And another thing that I've noticed as well is listening to podcasts, especially MJ's podcast, because he goes on it about a lot, is how incredibly delicate green tree pythons are. You know, is that a common occurrence, or is that just unfortunate for him and he tends to share it quite a lot? Are they really delicate animals?
I think it's really good that he does share it. You know, I'm one for...
Yeah, no, I do as well.
Definitely. There's some stuff going on at the moment that I'm documenting and just waiting to upload it eventually as one big video, if it goes good or bad. And I want to share all the rough and the smooth, most definitely. But yes, I would find... You know, what I really want is a lot of people to come into the chondro community, because I see the US with a huge green tree community, and I want that over here. So I don't want it to be gate-kept. Most definitely. You know, these things aren't too difficult to keep. You know, yes, they are more delicate than a royal python. You know, I would, you know, if you know the basics, then it's very much doable. I wouldn't say they're bulletproof, but yes, yeah. I have found, you know, they are a little bit more difficult than a royal python or a bull python or like a corn snake. And delicate wise, yes, they can be a little bit delicate, you know. But I think people link the word delicate to more because they've just got more precise temperature and humidity needs. You know, I wouldn't say they're much harder than keeping maybe like a lizard that might need kind of a humid and warm setup. You know, it's I think if you've got your equipment right and you know your parameters and you're just watching your animals, I don't think they're as delicate as people make them out to be.
Okay, so yeah, so once you've got like the basic husbandry needs of the correct temperatures, the correct humidity, they should thrive. What's Paul saying? I want to. Let's hang on. I'm gonna ignore the comments after this last one. This is the last one. Yeah, he says, yeah. I want a green tree python. I want a sick natural setup. I haven't got the space. Night and day, captive bred to wild caught, same as the tree monitors. There's not really a question there, actually. I was just reading his comment out.
Yeah,
I thought there was a comment on him. But yeah, I'm sure if he can find space, he can. Right, Paul, that's it. I'm not reading any more of your comments, but I appreciate you commenting. But we're going to crack on with the chat. As long as you got your... Go on, sorry, carry on.
No, I was just going to comment on that and just basically, you know, some people I define naturalistic versus bioactive completely different.
Okay.
I think naturalistic can definitely work. It's just, for me, having the sterile environment makes it a lot easier for me to keep my enclosures clean and just keep an eye on everything. And these puppy pads help, you know. I think it's just easier because I can spot, not that any of them have had parasites, but thank God, but just anything I can, just in the fluid that comes out when they pass feces, just to look at everything that might be going wrong. And if I need to take a fecal sample, send it off to the lab, and just monitor things a lot easier for me when you've got a larger collection.
Yeah. So how many green tree pythons have you got at the moment? Not including neos, let's just say. Just adults or grow-ons that you're waiting to get in there.
Only 15.
Okay, so that's like, it's about the same amount as adult royals that I've got. So you say only, it still takes up a big chunk of your time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I did notice in the conversation you had with MJ that you're quite connected with a lab. I don't know if that's through work or... But it seems to be quite handy as well, because a lot of people, I'm in quite a lot of WhatsApp groups and stuff like that. And one of the blokes on one of the WhatsApp groups recently was saying that his snake was wheezing. There was no bubbles or anything, but everyone was saying, oh, you know, probably an RI, get a swab done, send it off to your local vets. Mm-hmm. And his vets were charging like £235 for a swab. Whereas someone else in the group was like, oh, my locals charge £19. So I think I'm not sure where everyone's going with this, but it does really vary on the accessibility of people as well. So like you say, having the puppy pads and being able to like go instantly see that, like, there might be a little bit of a problem straight off to the lab is quite handy for you. So I can see why you're keeping them in a sterile environment. And the thing I see a lot with GTPs as well is a lot of prolapses. Now, I don't know if that's just coincidence that I'm seeing a lot of that, or is that something that does happen a lot?
I think, you know, I think I'm probably going to come towards that more if and when I get babies. But yes, it seems to be a thing. You know, adults can prolapse as well. It has happened to people, you know, especially if you're pumping these animals with food and, you know, they're quite inactive. Some some sort of the time. You know, depend. Mine do move at night. You know, people. Some people do say, you know, they won't use the enclosure, but I find that specific temperatures have helped with the movement on these animals. But you know, if you're pumping food, you know, it's not like you can't feed a green tree like the way you feed a royal. It won't work. And you know, especially in adults, you find that they've backed up. You know, or if the animal's dehydrated, and they're trying to pass a, you know, a substantial size of feces, they can prolapse. And then the neos, you know, there's a lot of conflicting information. It's more theory than anything. You know, people wonder if it's because of the lack of, is it the prey item? Is it hydration? Is it fluid? There's many reasons people are trying to link to the prolapse issue, that especially when they're neonates or when they're going through feeding trials. But there's no solid concrete evidence.
Okay. I think one of the reasons probably for that is, from my opinion, I know people have been keeping green tree pythons for a long time now, probably not far off like berms and royals, but I don't think anyone has been nearly as successful breeding like GTPs as they have been with berms, retics, royals, like the hardier sort of python, so to speak. So it's just a matter of time where obviously they're becoming much more accessible. Like you say, like I remember seeing green tree pythons when I was younger and they were like £1,500 a go, which is just... It's untouchable for most people. So as the price is coming down and they're becoming more available, and obviously people like you are really sort of innovating. That's one thing I noticed from the MJ chat, is that you really want to be like out there innovating people, encouraging people, building a community, which is what I'm trying to do with the podcast. It's not as easy because I'm sat here chatting with you, but obviously anyone that's listening sort of shares the message, hopefully.
Exactly.
Because like you say, like listening to all the stuff in America, and like everybody I speak to that's been over to the American breeders and stuff, it's all, everyone's really helpful. Everyone shares, like there's a much bigger community. Whereas in the UK, it seems you get like a few little pockets and it's very niche and not many people share the information.
Exactly.
So yeah, you like you're saying on the podcast, on MJ's podcast, that you want to build that community. And I am right there behind you pushing that, because I think that's a really, really good thing to do. And it just helps everyone, doesn't it?
Exactly that. It's what we need. We know I'm flying out to Arlington on the 21st to go to NARBC to meet a large group of people over there, and just speak to people that I've been speaking to for a while. And just seeing their community is quite inspiring, because again, they're all working together. They're all helping each other out. There's a lot of information spread. They have meetups. You know, there's so much community that I can see from an outsider's point of view, and it kind of inspires me to kind of do that over here, because I know we have the IHS shows, but and a few other shows that are privately run or conventions. But apart from that, you know, there isn't a great amount of community in regard, especially with a niche of green tree pythons.
Yeah. So, I completely agree. So, locally to me, obviously, I've got the ARC show, which isn't that local, but it's local enough. And then we've got IHS and the Bullseye show. They're the only three that I know. I know that you get, there seems to be quite a lot of invert shows, to be fair, but not reptile shows. The only other one that was local to me was the Surrey Reptile show. Surrey Reptile Society or something like that. But they have just like gone bust. They just decided after however many years that they're will be stopping doing that, which is a shame. So that's one less show. But I found with communities like that as well, is it was almost like there was a niche. So like that was, I don't know, I'm going to just throw some random numbers out there, but it was like 25 blokes or 25 people that have been friends for however X amount of years. And it was sort of a very close knit. There's not really like a big, arms open, welcoming community, so to speak. Like the Balls to You one is trying to do that. I think that's really good. And the same with MJ's Pythons, the ARC show, again, I'm really enjoying that and trying to build the communities. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I've launched the Patreon. Like I can't do it for free, so I'm trying to keep it as cheap as possible, but I'm hoping that it'll bring people in, and like, well, I'll be able to have like a green tree python section and like a royal section where someone can come on and go, oh, I've been a bit of a knob and made like my first purchase because I saw it in the shop and it was cool. I'm not sure what to do. And there'll be people in the group that go, it doesn't matter. Everyone's done that. Like, this is what to do. But that's what you need. Because if you go on Facebook, like, you go, oh, I've just bought this from a pet shop, and everyone's like, you should have done any research. You should know everything before you've done it. And it's just, I think it's the wrong way for the community to be. So, I think, it definitely needs pushing.
Definitely. I think that the Facebook groups I just try and keep away from the majority of the time. And again, it's just, it becomes too much of like a everyone has to learn. Everyone starts somewhere. The way I keep my setups at the moment are nowhere near the way I started keeping them years ago when I first got into Green Trees. So it's a learning curve. It's about reading books, talking to people, and not just always copying a specific, you know, you can pick parts and just find the way. You know, Pedro Caxino, you know, someone that's huge and started the Mosaic line, he was one of the person that told me that, you know, you got to talk to a lot of these experienced keepers and breeders and just pick parts and make your own path. You know, that's the part of growth.
Yeah, no, I think you are completely correct there. So if everyone just did exactly the same thing all the time, nothing would ever change. Mm-hmm. So like you say, even if you go, oh, I like 99% of the way that person's doing it, but I think if I put that 3 inches to the left, it's better. And if it is better and you tell someone, then it's constantly getting better.
Exactly.
I think people need to be a bit more open-minded than they are, especially like the reptile hobby is a hard one. People will say, I was very stuck in their ways because it works, but stuff can work better. They just need to start realizing that. But there's always the mindset in the UK. Yeah, I completely agree. I think the mindset in the UK is slowly changing though. And more and more people seem to be saying the same sort of thing. So it's we're getting there, I think, which is nice.
Definitely.
Let's bring it back round back to snakes. Mm-hmm. Let's go. So that podcast is aimed at sort of like the newer keepers. So let's talk about your setup. So can you explain, we'll go for an adult green tree python. I don't know if they vary from male to female, but you pick. What sort of setup is, like, we're going to go for one snake only. So what sort of setup are they in? And then what's your routine daily, weekly, and monthly for that one snake?
Right. So a lot of people keep males and females in different size enclosures. I like to try and keep all my males or females in the same size if I can. And that's all a 3x2x2. You know, some people do 2 foot cubed for males, 3x2x2 for females. I just go 3x2x2 across the board. Once they get to like a grown on stage past juvenile going into adulthood, they just go into 3x2x2, which works perfectly for me. Gives me a better gradient as well.
3 foot tall, yeah?
Yeah, no, 3 foot long, 2 foot tall, okay. 2 foot wide.
Okay.
And what I've found with that is also is it's become easier for me to create a gradient, especially when it comes to calling females and males in breeding season.
Cool.
Then what I would say is, you know, I use puppy pads, which we already discussed, and then they have either a very large, I would say semi-shallow bowl on each side, one in the hot, one in the cool end, and then they have between them, I'm just looking at them because they're all behind the camera. Yeah. I say they vary between 2 to 5 or 6 perches between in each viv. Plants, I like to have plants on sides, fake plants on sides, backs, and sometimes above to give them like a canopy feel, to give them some overhead protection. And I'll say daily routine, I'd come in, I change my water every day. You know, I can fully put my hands up and admit at one stage, I wasn't changing them every day. Now, I was probably changing them 2-3 times a week at a push. And I remember meeting Malcolm from Fierce Worms UK, my mentor, and him just basically saying to me, if you was in a warm box, would you want to drink warm water? Like, you know, and he was like, it's just, and I have found that when I give them nice, cool, crisp water, I don't know what it is. Even with the Royals, you put fresh water in it and they seem to just find it and they just drink.
I find the same thing.
I change water every day. Inco pads are, so some people, again, it's a bit controversial with spraying or non-spraying. Now, I was going for a large period of time when I wasn't spraying my green trees. And I wasn't going, you know, the only time I would spray would be if I noticed a shed cycle, I would start saturating the puppy pad, spraying the enclosure. And it was working out fine, but then I started to, before I came in here, so I moved here probably 4 or 5 months ago. And this room has done really well for me in regards, because you've probably seen me wiping my face. It's hot and humid in here. Now,
I'm baking in here.
Yeah, it's hot as it is, but, you know, it's humid in here and my humidity sits perfectly in here compared to where I was before. You know, I had basically snake tanks in different rooms, bedrooms, spare rooms, etc. And what I found was when I wasn't spraying, I started to get into like a cycle of bad sheds.
Right, okay.
Now, you know, maybe that's because the animals were drinking off the coils at the time and not drinking off the bowls. Because if you know, you could link that also to me not changing my water as much. And this was probably started doing daily water changes two to three years ago. And even more as recent. But I do that on a daily basis. Spray, I would say what my habit is now is that I come in and spray, saturate the puppy pad.
Yeah.
And if I come in the following day and it's complete, the puppy pad's completely dry. Because what I tend to find is I spray, I get a spike of humidity, and I spray at night. So my lights go off at 8 o'clock at night. Before they go off, I'll spray maybe 10 minutes before. There'll be a spiky humidity overnight, and then it will completely dry. Now, if I come in the next day and it's not dry and it's still some lingering saturation or humidity in there, that specific enclosure won't get sprayed.
Okay.
And then I guess, you know, sometimes when I see them in heavy shed, they will get like a shower treatment. You know, if they, not on a usual basis, but if I find animals that are in shed or they're having problems or it seems a bit dry, you know, it's really weird to describe, but I can look at my chondros now and go, right, that's in shed, but I think that's going to have a bad shed. I can just tell by looking. So that animal will get like a rain chamber kind of treatment, but it's not a rain chamber. I haven't made a rain chamber, and I haven't looked into making one. So what I'll do is I'll heavily saturate, sit there and just spray with a nozzle for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
And then the puppy pad will get taken out and it'll get clean. So I'm not leaving a residue of a pond in the bottom of the vid.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
It's like a constant spike.
But
other than that, it's just, yeah, just if they pass feces, the puppy pads get changed. If there's any mess, it gets changed. If it's clean through the week, the puppy pads will still get changed twice a week.
Yeah. Okay. And then like monthly as well. So how often are you feeding, let's say an adult female?
Adult female will get food every 3 weeks.
Right. Okay. And then I know that the size of prey, basically my knowledge is going off royals for the most part. So a royal, the average advice is like 10% of the weight, or it's like 1.5 times the biggest part of the body. I know it's quite, is it different for green tree pythons? What sort of size prey are you feeding it? And are you giving it a varied diet as well? Or are they just having like a rat every week, every 3 weeks, or how's it work?
So I feed predominantly rats, but I have fed mice. I have fed ASFs to my chondros as well, especially when I've had more of the fussy feeders, where if I've bought them and they've kind of gone off food, then I will offer everything and every size I can to have that animal feed. Without stressing it out. But predominantly I feed rats, and I would say like a female that is currently just started being called about a week ago for the start of the season. Yep. She's an adult female going on just over 4, maybe a little bit more, and they'll get a large weaner, so like 60 to 90 gram prey, and she'll get that every 3 weeks.
Okay. So yeah, if nothing else, it's cheaper than royal feeding, but it makes sense.
Definitely.
And do you find that, obviously, because you keep royals and green tree pythons, do you find, we're going to go a bit weird here now, but their feces, do you tend to get, because they're only being fed every 3 weeks, do you find they have quite small feces because they tend to hang on to the food and digest it a bit slower? Because I find with royals, like I've gone from feeding every 7 days to my female, like my adults now get fed quite sporadically, minimum of a 14-day gap, and I've noticed that the poos are like half the size of what they used to be, and the girls seem to be putting on just as much weight as they normally would. So yeah, do you find that they use more of the nutrients, so to speak, in the prey items?
I would say their fecal matter, I used to feed every, this is again before I had spoken to people and read stuff, I was slamming my chondros in the beginning when I first got them. So I got into chondros 2015 2016, and I was going every week, and what I was finding was a constant amount of large, more frequent obviously because they're eating more, but larger amounts of feces. But I'm finding that yes, there is more space between feces and more, yeah, that helps. Size wise I don't think it's made a considerable difference. I don't want to say, you know, I probably haven't paid enough attention in regards to that, like measuring size-wise and how much has been passed.
Yeah.
But I would say I don't think it's made a considerable difference. I just think there's probably less of it because now I'm feeding more far in between.
That's fair. To be fair, it wasn't even a question that I got written down. It just was something that popped into my head with the sporadic feeding. So, staying with the Green Tree Farmers, but moving away from their like the housing and setup and stuff. We did mention briefly at the beginning localities and designers. So, for those that don't know, what is the difference between a locality condo? I'm going to call them Green Tree Apartments because I get stumbled up on condos every time I try and say it. So, what's the difference between a locality and a designer Green Tree Python?
So, a locality is a specific phenotype looking animal that comes from a specific area of an island. So, you've got Aru, Sarong, you've got Cyclops Mountain, you've got Biak, you've got other areas of where they come from. And they're all
names of places in where they come from, right?
Exactly, different parts of the island. And they phenotypically look different. A designer is something that's been line bred to look a specific way, but all designers have just come from outcrossing different localities until they find, you know, an animal that looks how they want, and they just take that line and they go further down. So it's just outcrossing. They all started from outcrossing localities to make these designer animals, which have then been named different lines.
Similar to like dwarfs and super dwarfs in reticulate pythons.
Yeah, similar, I would say.
Cool. So with the like designer ones, obviously they are produced because people are aiming for a specific like colour or pattern, I presume.
Yeah.
Are there morphs in the Green Tree Python world that there are with royal pythons, or not at all, or not confirmed?
I would say there's localities, and then there's like designer lineages, you know, like you've got high yellow, you've got blue, you've got mosaic, you know, these are names for lineages. I wouldn't call them morphs, like royals or a different species.
Do we see in Green Tree Pythons one that tends to be the first sort of morph to pop up as an albino? Are there albino Green Tree Pythons?
There has been reported yet, something that you wouldn't probably see much of at all. Quite lucrative. But I do know there are some present in certain collections.
Do you think it's something that people would possibly try and work with in the future, like you get with like the morphs of the other pythons, so like royals, berms, retics?
I think there were so small amounts of albinos reported that I don't know if they, I can't sit and say that. I don't know what's left. Again, it was so secretive. I don't know if they still stand in people's collections. Again, you know, the albino gene is just in the wild. It's just a genetic change, you know. But I think the morph wise, I think again because the designers come from outcrossing localities. I think it will predominantly stay the way it is. I don't think it'll go down the line of having, you know, morphs upon morphs and stacking morphs.
That makes perfect sense. And do you find that the Green Tree Python community as a whole, are they more, what's the word I'm looking for? Do they tend to prefer, if you're breeding at home, do they prefer like locality, like keep the locality bloodlines pure, or is it all right to cross the localities? Necessarily your opinion, but like as a whole in the community.
I think it varies way too much.
There's
a lot of people that like to work with a specific locality and keep it at its purest form. And then there's people that love to outcross or love designer lineages, or there's some people that prefer designer way over locality. So I think it's really just preference. I don't think there's a general consensus. I just think it's really preference, basically.
Okay, so it's not a particularly frowned upon thing.
No.
That's fair enough. And then your collection, are they predominantly localities, designer, or have you got like a mix of both?
Well, I say mine are predominantly designer. I've got a few animals that are localities. But mine are predominantly designer. Yeah.
Cool. And then obviously to touch on breeding, have you produced have you paired any GTPs? Have you produced any yet? Are there plans to produce them in the future?
So I have done the pairing stage. I did post some pictures and people have seen up to like a certain point. The rest of it, it's just a bit, like I said, an MJ's one, you know, they've been paired. I saw a ovulation. And most I can say on that is the incubators on. It's just, you know, I'm quite superstitious, and
that's fair enough.
I haven't confirmed to anyone, you know, if there's been eggs, if there hasn't, or you know, if
because
I just don't want to put something out. If she, let's say she hasn't laid, I might, you know, it might not be successful, but even if it isn't, it's all going to be logged and it's all going to be shared just to show people my journey.
No, I get that. I think you want to, before you start sharing it to the world, you want to get to the sort of a stopping point in that process anyway, because you don't want to go like, oh, I've got eggs in the incubator and then they don't make it through the incubation process, or like I've got neos and then they all prolapse. And so I think it's a good idea, if especially would it potentially be your first clutch as well, I presume? I think you're banging the money there. Hold your cards close to your chest and share them when you want to, not when people are going, oh, come on, what's going on? But after the podcast, you can tell me if you want.
Do you know what? For me, breeding these animals, it's for me. I'm doing this because I love this species so much. So for me, whatever happens, I'm not in a rush to share it and put it on social media. Would I love to share it with people? Of course. But, you know, I just got to get the foundations right, get things. You know, for me, these are just stepping stones that I'm ticking off for my own growth and for myself. But I am currently calling two more females. I started 2 weeks ago or a week ago. They started calling to be paired for this season, upcoming season.
No, that's cool. And like you said, like you're not in a rush. And to be fair, even if they hatched 3 months ago and you post them in 6 months' time, it's still just exciting for everyone. And you, like I said, like you want to make sure you've got everything perfect. And I know, obviously, you're big on the YouTube and you're filming and stuff, so you want to make sure you've got that whole storyline there to share and make sure you've got all the information correct. You don't want to be posting stuff and then that go 3 months down the line, oh, actually, guys, I did this, but what I meant to do was this. So, no, it makes absolute perfect sense. So you've said you've got two more girls calling. What are the future plans for your breeding? Let's say for the next, I don't know, 3 years.
So I would say this year, I'm looking to pair at most. There's two more calling, but one may not be bred. Again, I'm not really trying to just breed as many as I can. The specific pairings that I've got, so I've got my next 3-4 years paired up, written what I want paired to what, just because of just genetics and what the babies could turn out to be and what genes would work the best with what. But one female is definitely going to be paired, one more this year, so that make it two this year that are going to be paired. Possibly three. And then I would say next year I should have another 2 to 3 females ready. So next year, whichever female is bred this year, they'll get a year off. Regardless if they're up to size or not, they'll get a year off. And maybe it'd be between 2 and 4 pairings next year. And then the following year would be the same.
Yeah. And then if you are successful and you manage to produce some neos and they go on to thrive, are you planning on holding some back? Are you going to hold them all back? Will there be some available if people want them in the future? Obviously, I'm not saying put them up for sale now. Yeah. I'm just curious what the plans are breeding wise.
I'd say for the first year, nothing will be for sale. Everything will be held, because the exciting part for me of Condros is watching that change. And, you know, the OCC is unbelievable. And it's something I wanted to do for so long. So I'm not in a rush to let any of these animals go. You know, if there's a couple that, you know, if there's friends or people that show interest that come forward, you know, I'll always take notice and get back to them maybe in the future. But I don't have no plans to make any sales in the first, first year or two.
That's fair enough. For those that don't know, what is the OCC?
So it's the autogenic colour change, and basically it's, you know, they either come out yellow or red neonates, and they will go through a colour phase change where they'll go from their juvenile colours to their adult colours, which normally in most majority of green trees would be green. So that colour change is very exciting because, again, it's even though you know what you've paired, because every green tree comes out yellow or red, it's like you never know what you're going to get. You know, you can't tell from day one, even at year old, some of them, you can't tell. They could still be completely yellow and completely red at a year old. And you really don't know what that animal is going to look like when it's older.
Okay. And do they tend to, when they go through the OCC, will they have any resemblance of their parents at all. So say you had two that, I know you get some that tend to have quite, you can get quite blue ones if you're really lucky. I've seen a few like bluish ones. If you were to pair two blue ones, and the, would the babies go through the OCC and then be blue, or is it completely random?
It's really dependent. It's to be frank, it's quite random, because you can put two all blue line snakes together, and you could get a clutch of all green snakes eventually when they're older.
Okay,
you know, it just depends on how, which one takes what gene and how it interacts. You know, so again, pairing specific lineages together, yes, you are more likely to get a specific phenotypically looking animal. But again, there's been plenty of people that have bought blue line animals. Like I've got two animals that are blue line crosses, and one is completely green at the moment. But then you've got blue, and then you've got super blue, which is super blue will go straight to blue from red or yellow, but majority from red.
Yeah.
But then you've got blue, which will go a green color, and then over years will start to turn blue. Now, the father of the blue line crosses that I've got was more of a green in color and then turned super blue as he went into being an adult. And we're not talking ovulation blue, like it's a male, so it's maturity. But the two I've got from that clutch, one is completely green and they're about a year and a half old, which again might gain blues as it gets older. But the other one is now starting to turn teal, which looks like it's got more of a higher chance of going blue.
Yeah, that's cool. And is there, it's probably personal preference, but is there like a more sought after one, or is it just completely personal preference?
It's all personal preference. Some people love blue, some people love high yellow, and some people like can't stand either one, or you've got specific lines like Mosaic, which Pedro's got in Portugal. I think it's all personal preference.
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
So last question on the green trees, and I'm gonna move on to royals just for a little bit. You say doesn't really matter how many numbers. If you're successful and you hatch a clutch and you've got a mix of red and green hatchlings, and someone said to you could only keep one of them, are you going to go for a green one or a red one?
You mean yellow? Yellow?
Yeah, I mean yellow.
For me, it's very dependent on lineage or locality. If it was from a higher yellow pairing, I may pick a yellow. If it was from an animal that holds melanistic genes, then I'd more than likely go for a red or like a maroon, dark red. Because from patterns of people have found that you see more melanism from the darker red babies.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Cool. We might come back to the green trees, but that's all the questions I've got written down at the moment. I might probably come up with more because I'm very interested in them. I just am also very uneducated in them. Moving on to royals.
Yeah.
We don't see obviously much, if any, royals on your Instagram. Mostly it's really, really cool Instagram reels of the condos.
Thank you. Thank you.
But what's going on with the bull pythons? Because obviously you've got a fair few in the room. What are you breeding them? If so, what sort of projects are you working with? We'll just sort of do like a roundup of royals.
Yeah, of course. I had five clutches this year. I didn't go for too many. I had five clutches this year. One of my favorite morphs is Pied. I love Pied, and I've loved Pied since a child. You know, there's a lot of controversy and people discussing, you know, is Pied going out, etc.
No, I love Pied. Pied's my favorite.
Yeah, that's that means one of my favorites.
I've
got a lot of Pied stuff, and I just keep it because I love it. But I'm also working with things like Puzzle, Clown, Ultramel. I'm also doing a few joint pairings and things with Malcolm from Fierce Worms, and he's got things like Autumn Sun and some other recessive stuff. But my favourite codon is Orange. Yeah, I've got I love Orange Dream. Again, another one that's a bit controversial with Mandarin. You know, I've got a pair of Mandarins that I just wanted to take a punt on. But I just love the orange look. You know, one of my favorite snakes I've got out of all of them is just like an OD yellow belly pied, high OD. It's stunning, and it's like one of my favorite animals.
Yeah, no, I really like the orange stuff. I did my first pairing this year that had OD in the mix, and I think I had five babies and three of them were OD combos, and they're so nice. Like, they're really nice. And to be fair, the male that I've got, he isn't that good looking at all. But I was, at the time, I was like, yeah, he's got what I need. Like, it'll work. And the babies have come out really, really nice. I don't know if that's because mum's nice, because the mum is Callie, who's my pastel calico. And honestly, she's like one of my favourite snakes. She's really basic, but I spent like a good 18 months trying to find the perfect calico, like, because quite often they're really low white and they look a bit rubbish. And honestly, she is ridiculous.
I love calico. And
every single baby I produce is incredible. So one of the babies I produced was a super pastel OD Enchi calico. It came out the egg and my wife went, we're keeping that one. Its name's Peaches. And it's staying. Like, I didn't even get a choice. I hadn't even like ID'd it or sexed it or anything. She was like, that one is staying. But yeah, they're all really, really nice. I don't really want to part of any of them. But we'll see. But yeah, no, I really like the OD stuff. But it sounds like you've got a lot of stuff going on with the recessives. Obviously, like I said, we don't see much of your ball python stuff. So is that sort of just kept and you do it because you love, for the love of it?
Yeah.
Where are you posting hatchlings if there are available? Are you on Morph Market or whatever? Or
I'm not on Morph Market yet, no. Hatchling wise, I'm not on Morph Market at all. Majority of the stuff that I produced this year, still got some of it growing on, even though they've got loads of feeds in them. Like today, people see it in the next video to come out. I had eight pies, OD or just standard pies, het, another recessive. And if I haven't got space, Malcolm's got a whole room. And we work super close. So, you know, he will take them on. And we'll just keep them for future products. I'm not really in an imminent rush. You know, there's some stuff that's being sold or on hold, etc. Just from like word of mouth or people contacting me. But I'm not really pushing. And it's behind the scenes. I do it because I love it. And that's pretty much it. I've just been doing royals. I've had royals since I was a child. So they just hold a place in my heart and just love playing with the genes, to be honest.
That's completely. I get that completely. Like, I've got, I don't know how many I've got now, 20 odd, 20, I don't know, with holdbacks and stuff. But like, obviously, I'm pairing, but the stuff I'm pairing is to try and produce stuff that I want to keep. And anything else, I might go, well, that's actually really cool, keep that. Or it's like surplus, and then it gets sold on. And a lot, I find there seems to be a bang on split where people are either breeding because they want to be like the next Justin, or they're breeding because they want to just produce cool stuff.
Exactly.
I'm very much on that side of the fence. Like, I want to produce cool stuff. Anything else, like, just
produce. People just need to produce. I just produce what I like. I love pied. You know, people are like, yeah, but you know, it's dying out and it's not worth more what it used to be. I'm not doing it for what it's worth. I'm doing it because I just love the gene. And this year, you know, I kept more, pretty much nearly all of it, but it's just because I use this year to go and just make a lot of like triple het stuff, and just grow it on myself. I'm very much, unless I really know someone really well or they're very reputable, I don't buy hets from anyone. But it's just a personal thing, because I don't know, maybe I've just had a bad experience previously. I'd rather make my own hets than buy hets. Again, I have bought, that's not me saying I haven't bought hets. I've definitely bought hets. Now, I bought a couple double het puzzle clowns from quite a reputable breeder. I'm not in a rush to go buy hets from a large.
No, that's fair enough. And if you're not doing it to produce mass stock to sell, and you've got the visuals or even hets in your racks, maybe not in a single animal. If you've got the stuff, if they've got the ingredients to produce your own hets and you're not in a rush, why would you not just produce them yourself?
Exactly.
The next couple of years, I've got a few double visuals growing up and like visual 100% hets as well. And I was thinking of like, so I've got like an albino het pied male and a albino pied female. And I was just going to put them together and make loads of cool albino pieds. But I've recently got a hypo 66% pied male. So he's going to go to the girl instead, hopefully prove out pied. And if not, I'm still making triple hets. And then that'll be cool in the future.
I love albino pied. I've produced it. I've got a whole clutch of albino and albino pied stuff at the moment in the baby rack. And I love albino pieds. I just love the way they look. You know, I love pied and the albino in it looks absolutely stunning. It's just preference.
I completely agree. I'm a massive fan. They're just like, I think albino obviously is one of the pioneers of morphs. And then pied is as iconic as it is. So mixing them together, you can't really go wrong, in my opinion.
Exactly. And dreamsicles, I think you can't beat a lavender.
To be fair, I will take a normal albino pied, probably over a lavender pied, to be honest. But I am colorblind, so I don't know how everybody else sees them. But in my opinion,
makes sense.
You know, but controversial, I'm not going to go any further than that. I don't want to upset anyone.
Yeah, of course.
We've been going for an hour. I'm really enjoying it, but we are going to start wrapping up, mainly because I'm melting in here today.
So am I.
Yeah. So I've got a few questions. One more question before we go. It's the RepChat Hall of Fame. So basically, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's designed for like a newcomer into the snake world or the reptile world. Imagine like a big museum hall. Every single exhibit is something that a previous guest has put in the Hall of Fame. So like we've had like full spectrum LED lighting, a specific type of water bowl. I can't think of anything off the top of the house in my head. But yeah, so what would you like to add to the RepChat Hall of Fame for new keepers to go and experience or go and try or go and use? It doesn't have to be a product. It can also be advice.
I would say product-wise, PVC enclosures. They changed the way that I keep green trees drastically, night and day. And that's be product wise, but advice wise, just ask. You know, just I've been there. Been afraid to try and contact people that, you know, like Hall of Famers, you know? Like
I know exactly what you mean.
Just ask. You know, you'd be surprised how many people are open to chat. I think sometimes it's that barrier of you not wanting to approach them because you don't think they will reply. Yes, sometimes some people might not, but just ask and just try and get in contact. It's the best way of learning. It's the best way of putting yourself out there. And if it's the only way of growing, and just read books and ask questions and talk to the people that have been doing it for a while and just make your own path.
No, I think that's absolutely brilliant advice. And I think, like you say, just ask, because 99.9% of us are quite happy to sit and chat for ages about animals. So if there's someone you want to reach out to them. And I'm sure for the most part that I'd say 99% of the time, you'll end up having a lovely chat with them. So that is pretty much the end of the podcast. The only thing left for you to do is to, if you want to do shout outs, and for you to plug yourself. So where can people find you?
Thank you. First, I want to say thank you for having me, Ben. It's been really absolutely amazing. I really appreciate you having me on. And hopefully in the future, very near future, maybe if you're free, I'll come back on again with either a good story to share or maybe not such a good story to share. But,
definitely. We'll have you back on again.
We can share that again in the future. Shout out wise, you know, for me, there's just so many people to shout out. But I just want to say thank you for everyone that supports me. Thank you for everyone that messages me. Thank you for everyone that comments on the reels. You know, thank you for everyone that gets in touch or just reaches out. I'm going to say a big thank you to Malcolm Dix from Fierce Worms UK. He's my mentor. But not only just that, he's like he's family. You know, it started with snakes, but now we are family. We go around each other's houses. We know each other's family. Like, it's an absolutely amazing bond. I also want to say a big thanks to my friend Jack. You know, that's always by my side on the shoots. You know, he came as a person that wasn't interested in reptiles, but now it spiked his interest. You know, he's looking, but he's always supported me. But alongside everyone else, all the Condro family, the people here, the Ark show, everyone was super lovely when I was there. Met great people at the show. It was very, very much more personable. Much more personal when people, you know, got to speak to more people one-to-one. So it was a lovely community being at the Ark Show. And I'm really looking forward to the next one. And just thank you for everyone. And if you want to find me, I'm on Instagram, Cryptic Condros. Same thing on YouTube. Trying to do bi-weekly uploads. There'll be another upload in a couple of weeks. that was shooting today and actually going to shoot more footage for tomorrow. And yeah, just going to America. And, you know, all I can say is, as a child, I dreamed of going to one of these American shows. I used to watch YouTube videos at the age of 13, looking at show tours, and I'm getting to live that. So, you know, keep an eye. There'll be a British person's perspective on these shows going on YouTube in a few weeks' time.
To be fair, I'm really jealous of that as well. So I will make sure I push that video for you as well.
Yeah. But again, Ben, thank you so much for having me.
No worries, man. It's been a brilliant, brilliant chat. I'm going to kick you out now. Say goodbye, and I'm sure we will catch up very, very soon. So thank you very much.
Thank you, mate. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, man. Awesome. I think that was a brilliant episode. Sal is a lovely, lovely man. I could probably sit here for hours and chat to him. But to be honest, I am roasting in the studio because it is far too hot. So I need to go and get in the ice bath. Thank you very, very much for listening. As always, if you are listening and you still haven't subscribed or followed or whatever you are able to do on the audio platform or YouTube, please click the button. Like, if you're on YouTube and you haven't clicked subscribe, just click it. It just helps that little bit. Obviously, likes, comments, all that sort of feedback as well, it massively helps. It's all free for you to do, and it really helps the podcast grow. Obviously, feel free to share it on your Instagrams and whatever as well. If you do want to support the podcast a little bit more than a like, a comment, a subscription or a follow, like I said at the top of the show, I have now launched a Patreon. So come and join the Repti squad. There's a link below. And yeah, hopefully we can grow a cool little community. Anyway, that's pretty much it. Last but not least, if you do want to keep up to date with me or the podcast, go and check out the Instagrams. My Instagram for the Royals and stuff is at Ben's Balls. Obviously, the podcast Instagram is at RepTiChat. Again, all the links are there below in the show notes. So yeah, that is it. Thank you very much, and I will see you in 2 weeks' time. See you later.